Welcome to Piedmont Arts. I'm Rachel Stewart.
This is not about a fantasy revenge. It was about a kind of trying to figure out one's humanity via the past.
That's David McGee, whose art is wide-ranging in style, but almost always addresses issues around race and history. When you look at David's paintings, you're likely to see people of color depicted as Western classical figures or unexpected pairings of images and words. And we'll chat with him about that and dive into that in just a moment. Also coming up on today's episode is Phil Vavra's fanfare feature for this week that has suggestions for things you can do in our area. The Beckler Museum of Modern Art recently added the exhibition David McGee, The Griot and the Nightingale, which brings together over 100 paintings and drawings by artist David McGee. McGee is based in Houston and is known for exploring art history, language, and the politics of race and class in his work. He and Beckler curator Katya Zawistowski join us to talk about this exhibition, which is the first major museum survey for David McGee's work. So thank you both for being here today.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
I understand that there's a little history that, Katya, you got to know David in Houston, and you're the one who brought this exhibition to the Beckler. And I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about why you wanted to put together this collection of his work.
Yes, I did indeed meet David in Houston when I was a grad student there in about 2010. His work just stuck with me. We became good friends and I followed his career over the past 15, 16 years. And actually, when I applied for my current role at the Beckler, this was a show that I mentioned to the director during my job interview. And it was one of the first exhibitions that I proposed for the Beckler Museum. And so this exhibition has been, you know, several years in the making. And the reason why I felt it was so perfect for the Beckler Museum of Modern Art is because the focus of the museum is to highlight modern art and its legacies, and really to put modern art in dialogue with contemporary art practices, which is exactly what David's work is all about. He engages with this incredibly wide spectrum of visual and cultural traditions, everything from European painting, but also to jazz, to other forms of music, literature, pop culture. And that kind of expansive practice, I think, really fits perfectly with the Beckler Museum's mission.
And that is one thing I've noticed looking at, you know, images of your work, David, is that it is very wide-ranging. And you have everything from classical figures reimagined as Black figures, right? Mm-hmm. Or you seem to label things in ways that people wouldn't expect. And then you've got these completely abstract works as well. Can you talk a little bit, maybe, well, let's take one of these ideas. Talk a little bit about reimagining these sort of classical or well-known figures as Black individuals.
It's about inclusion. It's about me trying to include myself in territories that I felt that people who look like me weren't included. And it wasn't and I often say this, it's not about a fantasy revenge. It was about a kind of trying to figure out one's humanity via the past. And so when you go into institutions and when you see people who look like you in subservient positions, you start to figure out that can't be all. It has to be something deeper. And if I wanted to continue the continuum of looking at this, I needed to reconstruct it to find out its true nature, because everything is deeper than it appears on surface value. And so I think what I tried to do with these paintings and what I tried to do with language is to kind of reconstruct something that fits my body, my spiritual body, into what I wanted to do in the paintings of what I thought the jazz musicians do. You know, they can take classical compositions and weave them in such a way that they fit their narratives, you know, but still pay homage to those images and to that music, you know? So I pay homage to those images of the past. I just reroute the images to fit my current narrative.
So the painting that sticks with me, and of course, this is not going back into antiquity, but it's of Salvador Dali, George Clinton, which I actually found that to be really clever and fun because if anybody knows George Clinton's work, I mean, he is pretty surreal at
He
times.
is. You know, the funny thing about those are part of a series called Ready Made Africans. And it was this take of a Duchampian term about the ready made, which is about trying to reimagine, just take objects and redefine them as art. It has a lot to do with architecture, it has a lot to do with who defines art. How do we know what is art and what is not? And sometimes, if it's in an institution, it becomes art to some people. And if it's out of the institution, it becomes something else to other people. George Clinton and Salvador Dali have a lot in common. They both are tricksters, people who have redirected the audience to thinking about other things. They both are pregnant with humor and other things. So I wanted to cross-pollinate those things. And at the same time, I know the viewers, some viewers are governed by images and others by language. And so when you redirect people in those kind of dichotomies, you make a third thing happen. It was funny, I always tell this story. Me and Katya knows this. When I first made that image, it was displayed in the Menil Collection here in Houston, Texas. And it was two ladies, two white ladies, looking at the painting for a long time. It seemed like almost 15 minutes. It was a long, long time. And I was there watching these women. And of course, they didn't know who I was. But after a long viewing, one of the women said, "I didn't know that Salvador Dali was black." It was a wonderful kind of misdirection and rereading into how people look at images. And it's what art does.
Do you feel like you accomplished what you wanted to? Like when you heard that, were you like,
Listen,
okay.
it not only did it give me great pleasure, but it gave me a foundation of my theories about how we read images and how we read language. They never really match. For these two ladies, their introduction to this image of Dali was that painting. Now, how are they going to rediscover that after that painting, you know, is something I'm interested in too. Human beings are always re misreading images and misreading language. This is what we do. And there's a danger in that also.
Yes. So there's some other series I think represented in this exhibition that are more abstract. Katya, can you speak to what those paintings are like?
Yes, absolutely. Well, one thing quickly, I just want to respond to what David was just talking about, if I could, just to also say that one of the things that I love about David's work is that the ways in which he includes Black figures in his work or motifs, symbols, objects that are in some way representative of Black history or lived experience, I think really expands art historical narratives in a certain way that I really appreciate. And, you know, whether it's a series of paintings that confront Picasso or, you know, a still life that includes a reference to Basquiat, it really highlights the ways that African Americans, people of color, have made significant contributions to, you know, the history of art that often has been overlooked. So that's one of the things that I really love about his work. You know, it's not just about inserting a Black figure, but it's about telling a fuller story. To answer your question about David's abstract work, he really has worked fluidly between abstraction and representation throughout his career. And in fact, the first paintings that visitors will encounter upon entering the exhibition at the Bechtler are, you know, predominantly abstract paintings from an early series called The Wastelands. But it's interesting because when I first met David and was introduced to his work, it really felt like he was known as a figurative painter. And I remember he showed a series of paintings called The Complications of Water. When those were first shown at Texas Gallery in Houston, I saw the exhibition, thought the work was beautiful, really interesting, but it was kind of a little bit of a shock because they are abstract. And I think that David can attest that a lot of people who saw the show were like, you know, what? This is a new thing for David. But in fact, that is a through line from the very beginning of his career. And just like with all of his work, really, there's a lot of narrative and literary references in the abstract paintings as well. And maybe it's because I have spent so much time looking at the sort of breadth of David's art practice, but when I see those abstract paintings, I actually see a lot of what one might call figurative elements in them. You know, whether it's depictions of turbulent water, as in the Complications of Water paintings, or an image of a police car, et cetera. So I think that the kind of boundary between abstraction and representation is very blurred in his work. But I'm sure, David, you'll have, you know, your own take on that.
I think you're exactly right. I think I often say that abstraction is more realistic than figurative painting. I think everybody's basically abstract. I think our lives are abstract. I think there's no true narrative. I think we assume that there's a narrative based on how we govern images and how we govern ourselves moving through space. And we figure that if everything seems recognizable, but basically everything is pretty abstract. And abstraction is just a quality of feeling, an emotional weight that I think interiorly we all carry within us, even when we're looking at images. The assumption that things are what they are is always a confusing take because they never are what they seem, and nothing is what it appears. So abstraction is a Greek term meaning to take from. And I think for creative people, from Miles Davis to Picasso, to Bob Dylan, sometimes you are moving stylistically based on the feeling you have on the ground at the moment.
What I'm hearing you say is that life is subjective for all of
That,
us. We all have our own perspectives,
exactly.
even if we think our perspective is shared by
Right,
everyone else.
it's true. It's nothing more abstract than the human figure.
Yeah, because we all have our ways that we think
The cosmetics of
somebody or
fate,
something is beautiful.
right?
Yeah.
So I think the point of being a painter or any kind of artist is freedom and not to be governed by the expectations of others. And so if what you're doing as for me as a painter, if you need to talk about something and the way you did it before doesn't fit how you feel about it now, you have to change,
So is that what happens, like when you enter into this new stylistic phase or something? It's because this is the way that best expresses. How conscious is it when you find yourself working in another
Well,
phase or another style?
I work automatistically in the sense that it's like working via a Ouija board, where I don't see any difference between abstraction and figurative painting. So the subject dictates how things are going to be painted. And I just go whatever the flow is. It's like a chord in music. The chord is like being a jazz, jazz improvisation. You just improvision, you just, the environment dictates and my feelings dictate how this thing is going to be painted. And as I always say, it's a great, statement by Gertrude Stein, the writer, that sometimes the painting is not even the painter's business. So I just go with, as they say, the flow.
Well, you brought up music, and so I definitely want to talk about the fact that you've got soundtracks that have been curated to go with this exhibition. You curated a soundtrack, Black Notes Project, which is a really it's run by a couple of people who have ties to Charlotte. They've curated a soundtrack, and then you've had some music composed. Is that right?
Yes, by my good
go with this?
By my good friend Chris Becker, a composer here in Houston. He composed something special for us.
Why did you feel like, why did you want this music element? I mean, clearly music influences your art, but can you speak a little bit more about that?
Well, music is a big deal for me. Sometimes, in some cases, music is the first of the arts, and in my opinion, and because how it makes people levitate and move, and how it renegotiates their feelings with images. I've always been interested in that kind of thing, that magic that music does. You know, painting is a direct hit. It's right there, beginning, middle, and the end, and you have to sit with a painting. Music affects you without you even knowing it. It makes you do things. So I thought it would, you know, and I love music and cinema, and I love all kinds of music. So I thought that since my paintings have a kind of a cinematic feeling about them, it just made sense to have certain pieces be governed by music and let people expand their feelings based on this music. And the music is wide ranging, from Philip Glass to Maria Callas to Miles Davis to, you know, Nina Simone, you know, and all of this is music that I've listened to. I just thought it added a kind of beautiful accent to the exhibition.
So I'm sure you know why you chose the pieces you did. Did you, when you heard the Black Notes Project playlist, what did you think of that? Did it give you any different perspective on your work?
I'm always interested in how people use other mediums. I was surprised at what they chose to some of the images. I was happily surprised that they chose one of my favorite composers, Julius Eastman. I just think he is so, I want everybody in your audience to know him, to rediscover him. And I had the privilege of doing a podcast interview about his life and the people who knew him. And so when they chose him, I was incredibly surprised and happy about that. As far as Chris Becker, because I've known his music for a while now, I had to have the music he did. I mean, the music is just so vast in what everybody chose that it's only fitting for that kind of exhibition. So,
yeah, I mean, yours is, they're both playlists I thought were wide ranging. It's everything from the OJs to Debussy.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Right.
Right. That's realism.
Well, we've got just a couple minutes left here. Katya, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what people can expect. And it's 100 works of art.
Yes,
I believe.
over 100 works of art spanning the mid 1990s to the present. So 30 years of David's career. And it features paintings and works on paper, but, you know, really everything from monumental canvases to more intimate watercolors. And it was really fun installing this exhibition. I mean, this really was a labor of love. One of the reasons why I loved installing this exhibition in particular is because there are so many, you know, narrative threads across David's body of work. And for people who are familiar with the Beckler Museum, or those of you, you know, those of your listeners who haven't been yet, our architecture is really interesting in that we have a kind of central atrium space. And so in our special exhibition galleries, it's this beautiful vaulted space with four windows that allow sight lines across the exhibition galleries. And so it really gives me as a curator these wonderful opportunities to create dialogues between, kind of more direct dialogues between different moments in David's career. And so when visitors come, you know, I do hope they take a moment to, you know, look through those atrium windows and see the connections between an oil painting from 1997 and a watercolor from 2024, and see the similarities and differences between those works and just the new stories that those those sort of juxtapositions open up.
I did want to say one thing about that, and I'm glad Katia brought this up. What I love about this exhibition is the museum itself becomes a major player in how we showcase these paintings. I mean, the architecture has a cinematic kind of poetry to it that enhances a kind of cinematography with each room where you can look, like Katia beautifully said, you can look across and see almost these kind of ghostly hologram kind of things where you are, it connects present to past. This is the beauty of the architecture of this space. It makes a show that could have been incredibly complicated to connect all the stories within it. But the space helps the viewer navigate through time. And this is what the Beckler has done for this exhibition. And I'm so happy that this show is at that space, and Katya and her leadership made everything possible.
Do you want this to go to another space
We
after
wanted
this,
to
or
go
do you think it
all
would be
over the
too hard?
globe. For
Silly
years and
question,
years
right?
and years. It'd be like the Odyssey. It just goes on and on.
Well, one last question. Who came up with the title of the exhibition, The Griot and the Nightingale?
I came up with that title.
Yep, David did. And it's just perfect.
That title is important for me because the griot is a storyteller from West Africa, and the nightingale is a symbolic term for poetry that, by merging the two, it's a storyteller speaking via poetry to a tribe of people to remind them of where they're going and where they have been. So, and I think it
I
fits.
think it's interesting that it fits in, but at the same time, you're using it to describe something visual,
Yes.
which I think is very interesting. Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
My
Been
pleasure.
talking to David McGee, the artist, David McGee, and Katia Zavistowski, who is the curator at the Beckler Museum. David's work is on display in an exhibition called The Griot and the Nightingale, and I believe it's on display through
Through
April.
August
No,
23rd. Yes.
August. August. Through August 23rd. That's right. But thank you both for
Thank
your
you,
time.
Rachel. Pleasure to be on.
Thank you, Rachel.
You can find out more about David and The Griot and the Nightingale by going to the Beckler Museum of Modern Art's website. Well, if you are looking for some things to do this week in our region, there's plenty going on, and Phil Vavra will fill you in.
Thanks, Rachel. This week's edition of Fanfare features a wide range of entertaining and edible offerings. You'll find a jazz tribute to Billie Holiday, some music from Broadway, and the world premiere of a Margaret Bonds musical. There are also quite a few barbecue festivals happening across the region. I wouldn't want to be a pig this weekend. Comma Performing Arts Center in Morganton presents the Jazz Legacy Project, Billie Holiday, God Bless the Child, featuring Maria Howe on Friday, April 17th. More than a concert, this event will also explore the development of Holiday's unique vocal style and how she blazed a trail for future generations. The Arts and Science Council is hosting its Midnight Marathon, a performance art-based fundraiser at the Carolina Theater in Charlotte on Friday, April 17th from 4 p.m. to midnight. The historic venue will be transformed into an immersive artistic showcase with nearly 30 local performers, including dancers, poets, singers, storytellers, filmmakers, comedians, improv artists, musicians, and more. The annual River Run International Film Festival returns April 17th through 25th and will feature screenings of 178 films representing 47 countries. They were selected from nearly 2,000 submissions. The screenings will take place at venues across Winston-Salem and Greensboro. Soprano Haley Sicking joins the Western Piedmont Symphony for the next Foothills Pop Series concert from Broadway to Hollywood at J.E. Broyhill Civic Center in Lenoir on Saturday, April 18th. The concert will celebrate the music of stage and screen with beloved show tunes and timeless American standards by George Gershwin, Stephen Sondheim, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and more. The music of Rodgers and Hammerstein is clearly in the air this spring because you can join the Davidson College Choirs, Symphony Orchestra, and Opera Workshop for an evening of the legendary songwriting duo's Broadway classics on Saturday the 18th at the Duke Family Performance Hall in the Knobloch Campus Center. Queen's University's Art, Design, and Music Department is presenting the world premiere of the musical Bitter Laurel by Margaret Bonds at the Gambrell Center in Charlotte on April 18th and 19th. The American composer's last major work, Bitter Laurel, tells the story of Elizabeth Keckley, who bought her freedom from slavery and became dressmaker to Mary Todd Lincoln. The 2026 Loch Norman Highland Games and Scottish Festival are set for April 18th and 19th at historic Rural Hill in Huntersville. This year's event also includes a Saturday afternoon whiskey tasting with five samples and a souvenir glass. Music at St. Albans in Davidson welcomes New England-based chamber ensemble Trio Ondata on Sunday, April 19th at 3 p.m. Violinist Michael Ferry, cellist Miriam Liske-Durandish, and guest pianist Bridget O'Leary will perform works by Haydn, Shostakovich, and more. Merle Fest returns to Wilkes Community College in Wilkesboro April 23rd through 26th. And the four-day celebration of Americana music features 13 stages of live music and entertainment, a kids area, and art and craft vendors. And the fifth annual Carolina Barbecue Festival is happening April 17th and 18th with tastings from more than 30 pitmasters and chefs at Victoria Yards in Uptown Charlotte. There are a couple more barbecue events happening this weekend, too. You can find those details on my complete fanfare column at WDAV.org. And fanfare is made possible in part by Bragg Financial. Rachel?
Thanks, Phil. That's it for this week's edition of Piedmont Arts. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast to get all the upcoming episodes, which will keep you in touch with our region's cultural life. And you can do that at wdav.org/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and iHeart Podcasts.